Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York, welcoming you to this March 21st nomination hearing for Ketanji Brown Jackson to the Supreme Court of these United States of America edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI. And we're on the Pacifica Network in collaboration with ycradio.org. That's right. The York College radio network is plugged into WBAI for these important conversations. We continue our phenomenal Black Women series today for Women's History Month. And shortly we'll be honoring none other than Dr. Zinzi Dillon, who is the president and CEO of Carmel Global Investment. And the former vice president at Barclays Bank in South Africa. She's bicoastal, both here in the United States and also residents also in South Africa. Well, let me also just quickly say that speaking of phenomenal Black women, again, we're talking about the nomination, the confirmation hearings that have begun for the phenomenal Ketanji Brown Jackson. Biden pledged boldly to nominate the first Black woman for Supreme Court of the United States, and it is underway. Of course, the Republicans will take their jabs, and they will do this, that, and the other. But at the end of the day, she is eminently qualified, overqualified, as MC Hammer would say, can't touch that. And, you know, Aretha Franklin had the right phrase, respect Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson. Also like to just take note of the women of Ukraine as we talk about Women's History Month. Phenomenal to see literally thousands of women taking their children, safely handing them off to relatives and friends and neighbors and friendly company, countries like Poland and Romania, Moldavia, and others. And then going back, taking up arms to engage in the fight. That is something that we want to talk about in our closing part of our discussion as well. Also want to ask people to, you know, got to be careful here now because it looks like another variant is on its way. People were in a hurry to hurry up and get back to normal. And I guess this will be normal. But the normal is to keep your mask up. Keep your mask ready at a minimum. I don't even argue about the vaccinations anymore, but mask up at a minimum. Be ready to go. Also, just want to quickly say that the People's Organization for Progress is at it again, doing some very positive work, if you will. And the People's Organization for Progress had a press conference today. And of course, we all know that that is the long-term chairman of the People's Organization for Progress, Larry Hamm, and they are putting together on April 4th, the what I call the memorial of the martyrdom of Martin Luther King. They're doing a millions people march for voting rights, equality, democracy, and peace. And those of you who want to get plugged into that, we'll try to talk more about it in the coming weeks. You can call 973-801-0001. That's 973-801-0001 to plug in to the People's Organization for Progress and the Millions People's March for Voting Rights, Equality, Peace, and Democracy, which will be held on Monday, April 4th at 5 o'clock p.m., starting at the Lincoln Statue, 12 Springfield Avenue in the People's Republic of Newark, as we used to say back in the day. Well, as I said before, we're continuing our Phenomenal Black Women series, and we are delighted to have with us this afternoon someone that I've come to know and admire because of the incredible work that she does. She is a sister from the continent, the continental African, if you will, but is bicoastal, and that she is just spreading her wings to do incredible work throughout the diaspora and on the continent itself. Again, I introduced her earlier as Dr. Zinzi Dillon, president and CEO of Carmel Global Investment. and also a former vice president, maybe she still is, we'll get that correction in a moment, of Barclays Bank in South Africa, a phenomenal Black woman. We welcome to our microphones, no stranger, we've interviewed her before, but now this is a special occasion. We welcome Dr. Zinzi Dillon. Dr. Zinzi Dillon, welcome to Vantage Point.
Thank you, Dr. Ron. It is an honor to be here. Thank you to all the listeners who are out there, including those who are tuning in from Africa. Thank you.
All right. Well, let's get right into it. Let's talk about who Dr. Zinzi Dillon is. Where were you born? Let's start with some background. Where were you born? Tell us a bit about your family, maybe about influences. Let's get started with background. Who is a little bit about Dr. Zinzi Dillon?
Thank you. I was born in Zimbabwe in a city called Harare. My mother, she was a teacher. My father was a business person. I'm born in a family of three, so we are two brothers and one sister. So I was born the only girl. Of course, I do have some step brothers and sisters, but between my mother and father, it was the three of us. Born in a family where prayer was very important, so I was actually born on the on the altar of prayer and raised that way. Yeah, and I grew up going to Zimbabwe, to a school in Zimbabwe, and then high school in Zimbabwe, and of course started working and then went into college, into university, where I ended up doing an MBA in UK with Manchester Business School. And then I got an honorary doctorate based on the work that I'd done. So that's really my background, high level. Right. I started working in Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, which
Wait. Let's slow down a little bit here. Let's tease this out a little bit more. Zimbabwe is a nation which has a storied history, actually, because of, in my era coming up in the struggle for the liberation of Africa, it was one of the last of the colonial, in fact, it was, Zimbabwe is the liberated name. It was known as Southern Rhodesia. And we fought in this country in a liberation movement along with the forces in Zimbabwe to free Zimbabwe and Mozambique and South Africa and Namibia and Guinea-Bissau and whatever. So just talk to us a bit about growing up in Zimbabwe in this era. What was that like?
In that era, it was there was some segregation, black and white. When I was in high school, in Form 1, that's when we got independence. But all I could remember was the celebration, we were celebrating. But, the segregation was very, very intense. And, of course, during that time, before independence, there was the Liberation War. There was a lot of fighting going on, especially in the rural areas. We got to hear a lot through our relatives. People their heads were put into the water so they can disclose where the liberation soldiers were. And all that. So it was a very, very hectic time. Not something one would really want to go through. But eventually, Zimbabwe got its independence. And post independence, we saw obviously the change that happened. The change in terms of even the education system, education, free education. for everyone from primary school to high school, which was very good. As you may know, Dr. Ron, Zimbabwe's literacy level, it was in its 90s. It's still considered a very high literacy level country. So education was very key in Zimbabwe. And even as we were growing up, there was a lot of focus on education, because you educate someone, no one can take it away. A car and something, they can take it away, but the education that you carry, no one can take it away from you. You even actually pass it on to the next generation.
And women, I want to talk to you because we're talking about phenomenal Black women. And of course, women throughout the world, and both in Africa and the Caribbean and the U.S., it's not necessarily been easy. There have been often challenges. And so talk to us about, as you were in Zimbabwe and making your way, about the role of women in that, in the sense that how were women being treated, some of the, maybe some of the challenges that you may have faced. Just talk to us about what it was like to be a woman with the kind of aspirations that you had growing up to achieve the kind of things that you have achieved.
Yeah, Dr. Ron, Zimbabwe is a matriarchal nation, matriarchal culture. So there's a lot of honor that is given to women. I'm just going to respond with a bit of background history, so I can bridge into the business side of it. So when a girl is getting married, the father does not get, a man comes to pay what we call rora, which is the bride price. The mother has to be given everything that is supposed to be given to her, and then what is left will be for the father. And if the husband doesn't have enough money, then he has to go and to work for more money to bring to the father. So that's the culture of Zimbabwe. The Zimbabwean months, it has got they are shonan names for each month, and the month of February, it is the month of women. It's actually called Kukazi, which is women. So that has been there before even colonization. So women are very, very honored. Now, going to into business, it was a business like for my experience, going in after independence in a male white dominated banking system. Of course, there was a lot of segregation. But as leaders, Black, male leaders came in, there was also a lifting up of the women. But one thing, women have always been considered to be household, champions. The workplace was for men. Now to break through into that terrain, it was, of course, calling in for hard work, where you have to work harder, where you have to show yourself that you can do it. But what I found to be very, very, maybe giving me some rest, so to say, is to be who I am in whatever form, wherever I am, just show up as myself, and do the best that I could and I can. And of course, as I rose up through the ranks, there were positions where I would get emails, and these emails would be addressing me as dear mister, because they didn't think a woman could hold that position. So, yeah, so that has been the journey in Zimbabwe. I could, you know, give you experience because later on I went into South Africa because the banking system there, it was much larger, much bigger. So I transitioned into the South African right. banking system. Yeah.
I want to circle back, though, because, again, it says that you did have to face challenges, even though women were held in high esteem. It's almost like the notion of women on a pedestal, you know, that women are glorified. And yet there were certain positions that reserved really for men. And you still had to crack through and to work extra hard to prove yourself. And again, the idea that you received emails addressing you as Mr. is an illustration of that. But nonetheless, as you said before, you were able to overcome, and I would suspect, and we'll talk about this even more later, that things have changed significantly in terms of the role of women now, not only in Zimbabwe, but role of women in Africa in general. You talked a bit about your education, and ultimately, I think you talked about going to Great Britain. Talk to us about your education and your choice of career. Why is it that you chose to go into the field of, dare I say, finance and economic development and ultimately in banking?
Yeah, the choice was, let me just, it was not like something that I would say, wow, I'd really want to go into banking. I was just, making applications. And I got sent for an interview to the Reserve Bank. That's how I landed in the banking. But all I know is that was really God orchestrated because that became my calling in terms of banking. So I really enjoy banking. I started off right from, I was in the international banking system, financial markets. So right from the back office, those days, there is back office where you are dealing with paperwork. And then I moved into the front office. The front office, really, it was trading. So I became a trader, the first black woman to trade in the Reserve Bank. So I was a spot foreign exchange, spot trader. Then I went into forward trading and eventually into gold trading. But I must say, gold trading, I wasn't making decisions on my own. These decisions had to be made with the approval of the deputy governor then. So that's really my career there. Then I ended up, when I left Reserve Bank, I was the head of finance, which is deputy director. There were no women directors at that time. So that was the highest position a woman could hold in the Reserve Bank. So that was my journey. And throughout the process, I also, throughout my life career in the central banking, in Reserve Bank of Zimbabwe, I also got nominated to be a fellow for the Central Bank Regional Pool. So what happened was the central banks in East and Southern Africa, they came together. They said, we are getting so many consultants from UK, from the US, but they don't have the regional content. And we need to develop our own regional expertise. So we need to start developing our talent pool within the region. So there were so many people who were nominated. From a nomination list of 132 candidates, I was shortlisted to 32. And then eventually I was one of the 14 that were selected. And I recall very well the selection process was including the governor for Reserve Bank of Botswana. She's late. She passed on a few months ago. She was a woman, and everybody knew that you don't waffle. We call it don't waffle. You don't you don't just say anything that is not really solid, because she will pursue you, because she wants to know if you know what you are talking about. And I recall, whilst I was waiting for that interview, there was a man who came out of that interview. His whole shirt was all wet. That was really, for me, one of, to say this woman, she really made this man to sweat, because I don't know what happened there. But in short, I became one of the 14 where I was trained under the World Bank. My mentor was at the World Bank. I had to be sent on different work attachments, Bank of England, to go and study what is done in the Bank of England. I went to Central Bank of Finland. I went to the World Bank, to the Federal Reserve Bank here in New York. So I went to various institutions globally to go and learn, so that I bring that knowledge into the region. And of course, there was a process that one had to follow, including even writing a paper, which you had to go and defend before a panel. And this panel included, some experts from BIS, Bank of International Settlements, which is really the bank that writes the frameworks, the global frameworks for banks.
And so tell us about your role at Barclays Bank, because that is one of the world-renowned banks, of course, built on enslaved labor, but nonetheless a world-renowned bank with great reputation as one of the premier banks in the world. And you landed there. So talk to us about your role at Barclays Bank.
Yeah, my role at Barclays Bank, I started off as the chief risk officer for operational risk. And then I became the managing executive for the chief risk officer for the services cluster, which had about 6,500 people. It was huge. It was servicing the whole bank. And then I moved to corporate and investment banking. I had opportunities to go and work for Barclays in London. I did go there, but the opportunities were not talking to me. Then I ended up being in Africa, looking after the corporate and investment banking. But the sector was called public sector, so I was looking for public sector for the whole continent, excluding South Africa. And so I used to travel quite a lot, developing the strategy for Africa for public sector, which was big because it was dealing with national governments, subnationals, which are cities and local governments, as well as state-owned companies across the continent, making sure that their corporate and investment banking needs were met, and we did understand them. So that was very interesting for me until 2017, when I left to come over to the U.S. So why did I end up in public sector? It is because of my boardroom experience. When I was in Zimbabwe, I was appointed to this state-owned company. It's called Grain Marketing Board. Very, very interesting place because it was an organization, a state-owned company that was buying and regulating commodities trading in Africa, and making sure in Zimbabwe, making sure that Zimbabwe had strategic reserves. When we talk about strategic reserves, whenever there is hunger, there is famine, there will be enough to feed the nation for a few a few years or until the next bumper harvest or the next harvest, which is premised really on the Joseph model that happened in the Bible in Egypt. So, so that was the Grain Marketing Board. I was chairing the audit committee there. When I moved over to South Africa, I was appointed to the state-owned company. It's called the Department of Public Enterprises. This is the national government arm that controls all state-owned companies, including South African Airlines, then including the railways, the energy. All energy was controlled by that government department. So it was the shareholder on behalf of the government. So I was appointed to chair that audit committee. So I worked with the government minister. So I worked with three different ministers as they came, they left, the other one comes. So I worked with different state ministers. I would go to parliament together with them as they presented the budget, because we had to approve the budget as the audit committee. But I recall, Dr. Ron, one day, the early days of me being the chairperson of that audit committee, it was a huge audit committee. We had people from, the audit firms, big firms, different people. And there was this issue that needed to be dealt with in that meeting. And I tapped into the wisdom of God, and I dealt with that issue. During tea break, this man came to me. He was one of the audit committee members. He owned an audit firm, an accounting firm in South Africa. He came to me. He said, he was black. He said, I didn't know that women could handle this position so well the way you did. I would like to thank you for what you have done and what you are doing. For me, that has never left me, because it showed that men, they thought women could go to, they could do so much, maybe pouring tea, type of things.
Right.
But no, he saw something different, which was really an honor for me. So I also did, I was appointed again at the Public Service Commission, which is the department that actually manages employment for all government employees.
Right.
Right. So I was a chairperson of that audit committee. I was also chairperson of Cluster 2 for the government of, it's like state government, which is called the Gauteng. The Gauteng looks after Johannesburg, Pretoria, Ekurhuleni, which is the national airport city. So it is huge. It's actually the biggest in terms of budget-wise. So I was looking after Cluster 2 as the chairperson for that. And then later on, I was an audit member of the Department of Mineral Resources, which is a department that manages all mineral rights in South Africa. As we know, South Africa is really a resource-based economy and leading on the continent as well.
So what we are seeing is you bringing, and in America they call it the so-called glass ceiling, and here you are cracking the ceiling in Africa over and over again, really, really achieving time and time again in ways that were an honor to, I'm sure, your family, to you, astounding some men along the way, but nonetheless, your faith in God, as you had talked about it, giving you the courage and the vision to step into these spaces. To our listening audience, you are listening to Dr. Zinzalee Dillon. She is our phenomenal black woman for today. She is the president and CEO of Carmel Global Investment, and a former VP of banking and of Barclays Bank in South Africa. And we now, Dr. Z, want to turn to, you eventually decided to start your own firm. So talk to our audience about the vision and mission of Carmel Capital Investment.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Ron. Having worked in banking for over 35 years, exposed to reserve banking or central banking, retail banking, before I even go into corporate and investment banking, retail banking, there's a small niche bank I would like to just highlight that I worked for. It's now called UBank. It's in South Africa. Very, very interesting bank. It was actually one of my exciting moments in banking. Very, very rewarding there. It was a niche bank. It is a niche bank owned by the Chamber of Mines and by the National Union of Mine Workers, who came together. They were collecting funds, and they decided, let's form a bank, and they formed this bank. So when I joined that bank, they were going through some issues, so I went to set up their risk and governance department, which eventually got a national award by the Institute of Risk Management for Southern Africa for having the most effective risk management program. So just to highlight that, and then I ended up being the interim CEO before I moved over to Barclays, APSA Group at the moment. So just to respond to your question, yes, it has been a very interesting role there. I having done all that, I said, what is the next assignment? I always ask God for the next assignment. Okay. The next assignment is now I need to set up a Kingdom Bank, very, very clear. So this starting off of Carmel Global Capital, firstly, it was to bridge opportunities, to connect opportunities to funding. That's really the role of Carmel Global Capital. There are big projects on the continent, mines being mining rights that are there, that I have access to, you know. So it was really leveraging on the experience and the expertise, and also even working with Barclays. By the way, Dr. Ron, Barclays left Africa. It's now APSA Africa Group. So they left a year after I left. So anyway, so connecting those opportunities and working with the diaspora, very, very key, because I had you know, issues where the diaspora, they really want to do business on the continent, but they landed in the wrong hands. That just brought some credibility issues. So my objective is to create that trusted bridge so that we bring credible investors and match them with credible to credible opportunities. So that's what I have been doing, and also help even with the structuring of some of those investment transactions. So that's what I've been focusing on. So at the moment, Dr. Ron, we are building a Kingdom Bank in Nigeria. We've already raised some funds, over 215 retail investors have signed up. We have been having conversations even with the regulators there, and a lot is happening. It is a bank that is going to focus on small businesses. Small businesses, because small businesses have never been paid attention to. Given my experience from banking, if you are in those big banks, it takes a lot to understand small businesses. And it takes a lot of patience and interest, invested interest. You have to be somebody who really wants to see though the small businesses being lifted up. So that's, and of course, I would like to honor the other banks that have been doing that, but it has not been significant. I'll give you an example. In Africa, we need about $100 billion to close the funding gap for the small businesses. We call them MSMEs or small medium enterprises. So $100 billion is needed every year. So even the big banks, after what they've done, they still the $100 billion. So that's really the focus that we are working on, making sure that they are clearly understood. Most of them, they don't have balance sheet. They didn't inherit, billions or millions or whatever from their parents. So it's really they are first generation business people. They have good business plans, but not paid attention to by most of the big banks. And why is that so? Because they don't have the collateral. So the bank that we are developing, the solutions is really looking outside the box. So it's a lot of thinking, a lot of understanding the social structure for that kind of market, and coming up with different innovative solutions to try and address the same risk issues and mitigate the same risk issues that that have been highlighted maybe by the big banks. So that's basically what we are working on, and we are now working on institutional capital fundraising. Right.
Mm-hmm. Kingdom Bank in Nigeria. Now let me ask this question. How did you meet the Reverend Dennis Dillon, since the two of you have become what I call a match made in heaven? How did you meet this man, and how does it feel to be a part of a power couple?
Wow, that's interesting. We met at a business table. That's how we met in South Africa. I was representing the bank, which had partly sponsored this global conference that was happening in South Africa. Reverend Dennis Dillon was leading a delegation of business people out of the U.S. into South Africa. So I was at the main table with the organizers there, and he was there at the main table, and we just connected because I was leading a group of Christian business people. Every year would come to New York, would connect, would go to Silicon Valley. We started doing that from 2012. So in New York, I said, wow, we are coming in June. And he came to our meeting. And of course, one thing led to another. And I know it was a God set up connection and relationship and marriage. So I honor God for that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So in a real sense, faith has played an incredible part in your journey. And it seems that that was perhaps one of the things that created this connectivity, because Reverend Dillon is a strong proponent of faith and belief that the gospel and is about thy kingdom come on earth as it is in heaven, and that it is not sufficiently theologically laid out, that economics is important. So I would assume that maybe that was what made the connection.
Absolutely, Dr. Ron, and somebody who really talks the language in terms of economic empowerment. So it's not only talking about spiritual and just praying without, you know, the faith aspect of it. So that's really, it was a deep connection for me. So, yeah. So we thank God for that.
All right. Well, there's a lot going on. And also you talked earlier about how business people from the diaspora were having bad experiences. And I know for years and years and years, going back to my very first visit to Africa back in, sounds like about 1970 or so, people were talking about, you know, you know, be careful, and people will eat the money. And so having credible partners and knowing what you are doing, it's not that you cannot do business, but you certainly need to have credible, reliable partners. So let me just finally ask our phenomenal Black woman, Dr. Zinsley Dillon, what's next on the horizon for you? What is your next venture? Is it just consolidating the Kingdom Bank, or do you have some even larger vision that you would like to reveal to our audience today?
So before I answer that, Dr. Ron, just again, the project that we are working on, which is part of the next question anyway, we made sure that we had a panel of credible strategic partners. One, we've got a panel of lawyers. We've got one here in New York, one in London, one in Abuja in Nigeria. We've got an accounting firm that has reviewed our projections, making sure that they are credible and all that. We've got a credible PR company. So we have put a panel to make sure that, and including banks. So we've got a panel of two banks, credible banks, and the money that is being raised, the investment money, is going into an escrow account. No one has got access to it. We don't have access to it. The only time the money will move is through a board resolution straight into the central bank for the licensing fees and all that. So that's how we have structured it, to make sure that it is credible, the whole process is credible. Now, what's next is obviously the institutional capital, and then consolidating. Nigeria is big. It has got over 214 million people. It's the largest economy in Africa, and it commands a lot of even wealth as well. So Nigeria is big. There has been a negative narrative on Nigeria, but it's turning around. It's because of a few that have gone, because there are so many, a few. But Nigeria alone, it has got credible people. So even the people that we are working with, the promoters, the board of directors, these are people who are credible, people who have been advisors to the economic advisors to the president of Nigeria, people who have been directors and chairpersons of banks in Nigeria. So they are credible people. So that's really the next thing. So focus is going to be on consolidating. And thereafter, because when we did, the introduction of the project, there were other people from other continents, and they were saying, please, we are ready for you. So we'll progress and launch in other countries. But for now, focus is on consolidating in Nigeria. So that's the assignment. And Dr. Ron, the African Union Development Agency. So African Union, it has got the political side of it, but there's also the economic development. So the African Union Economic Development Agency, which is called NEPAD, they also appointed me as their goodwill ambassador to the U.S. So, again, I work a lot with the African Union Development Agency.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, you are a phenomenal Black woman, Dr. Zinsley Dillon, and a part of a power couple. And I wanted our audience to just hear, particularly from a sister from the continent who is really spreading your wings and breaking barriers and achieving such phenomenal things. We really, really, really appreciate you spending time with us today on Vantage Point, and we look forward to continuing watching your career as you move forward, building out the Kingdom Bank and building out economic development throughout the continent and throughout the diaspora. So, Dr. Z, as we affectionately call you, thank you so much for spending time with us today on Vantage Point.
Thank you, Dr. Rowan, and thank you to the listeners. All the best with Vantage Point Radio. We hope you'll be able to launch one in Africa.
Well, we're open to that. We're certainly open to that. You know, we're working on Black World Media Network and the Pan-African Unity Dialogue and all of those projects. So we're looking forward to it. So thank you so much. Really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. All the best.
All right. To our listening audience, we let that play out a little longer. We had anticipated a little bit more time for call-in, but I like to let people hear what is going on. We do have a few minutes left to have people call in if they choose to do so. You can call in. There may be someone who wants to call in and give a shout-out, a tribute to Dr. Z. You can do that at 212-209-2877. Just a few more minutes left in the program, but we have time. 212-209-2877. Let me slow down and say it again. 212-209-2877. To give a shout out to Dr. Zinzali Dillon, or to, for that matter, say a tribute to any phenomenal Black woman that you would like to say a tribute to, or maybe a shout out to, again, a Ketanji Brown Jackson, just to say, right on, sister, and let's get this done. But also I'd like to just quickly take this time to emphasize the importance of WBAI Buddies, WBAI Buddies. I don't know how well we did last week. I know we begged hard. I always try hard. I'm not sure I'm successful, but I always try to make the case that it's incredibly important that we have WBAI Buddy support the work of WBAI. A WBAI Buddy is a listener, a supporter, agrees to make a sustaining contributor, that is to say, to give a minimum of $10 a month or $120 a year, so that the management has a base to work from. We just talked about economic development. We just talked about management. This is so you kind of can predict what your income is like. We had a very successful tower drive that was very successful in helping to just move the needle forward in terms of building out the edifice and infrastructure of WBAI. Our program manager says that we are growing in listenership. That's great. That means that people are tuning into the rich variety and menu of programs. That we really want to not only sustain it, we want to bolster it, and we want to make sure that we have economic, financial stability. So as I mentioned last week, if you give $15 or more, and you do that by going to give to WBAI.org, and that the two is numeral to give to, that's the numeral, WBAI.org. And by the way, the way you do it is you put it on your credit card, your debit card, your checking or savings account. There are ways in which you can do that. And I guess there's these new apps that you can do as well in order to make sure that you become a sustaining contributor. I am a sustaining contributor. I am a WBAI buddy. I just looked at my statement just as I was paying some bills last night, and there it is on my bill. It's a WBAI. My contribution is right there. So I don't have to worry about it. It just happens, and that's a good thing. You don't have to worry about, oh, I forgot to do it. No, because you sign up, and it becomes a recurring payment, as they call it. You can also call, and I would encourage people to do that now, 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. You can say, I heard the professor today. I heard that phenomenal interview with the phenomenal Black woman, Dr. Zinzali Dillon. And I was encouraged to become a WBAI buddy during Women's History Month. So 212-209-2950 will get you in. And if you come with $15 or more, you get a tote bag. And you get a bunch of other goodies, including access to a phenomenal, what is it called? The archives of women's programming that I read last week. I don't have it in front of me today. It is absolutely unbelievable. Hours and hours and hours of rich programming about women. And of course, there's a lot in there also about Black women and just the heroes and the heroines, I'm sorry, of the women's movement over the years. 79 hours of programming. So I do want to encourage you to become a WBAI buddy. 212-209-2900. But we also have just 5 minutes left, but that's not too late for somebody to call in and give us a shout in terms of today's program. You can just call and say, hey, I enjoyed the program today. That'll be fine. Or you, there may be someone out there who knows Dr. Zinzidi Dillon and who will call in and just say, yes, I'd like to give a shout out to Dr. Zinzidi Dillon. So that we have an opportunity, just a few more minutes left on the program. 212-209-2877 is that number. 212-209-2877 is that number for a quick shout out if there's someone who would like to call in at this point in order to give a shout out. Otherwise, again, you know, we're going to continue this series. Next week will be Estela Vasquez. Some of you know her from the labor movement. Really, really powerful. We're going to conclude with Estela Vasquez. She is now the retired executive vice president of one of the executive vice presidents of 1199, the vaunted 1199 SEIU. And of course, that was Martin Luther King's favorite union. He really, really, really loved the Service Employees International Union, SEIU. That was his favorite union. And we love them too, because they have been through Estela Vasquez and Bruce. I'm blanking on Bruce's name now, but also our president has been our host for the Pan-African Unity Dialogue. We do have a caller. Let's get that caller in. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Dr. Daniel, Daryl McPherson, Bronx, New York. Thank you for an excellent interview with Dr. Dillon. One, you've been getting a lot of callers. However, because the BAI phone system is unable to function properly right now, that's what the delay is. So know that you're being listened to and people are trying to reach you. It's just that we need to raise money for a better phone system. Two, with regard to the tower fund, we raised less than $100,000. So people who want to keep BAI on the air need to remember that we need another $170,000 in order to complete that fund. Three, the way that you can donate to WBAI if you're capital challenged is to go to whenever you do a search, and for instance, you could do a search on Dr. Dillon using goodsearch.org with WBAI as your charity of choice. If we could get 100,000, if we can get a million people to search on Good Search out of a population of 15 million in New York, the New York tri-state area, we could get $100,000 and we could start taking care of that tower fund. And also, Dr. Daniels, would you register Black World in the 21st Century with Good Search so that those who are challenged could also donate to your 501c3?
Right. All right. Well, thanks much. We really appreciate that. Again, I know we put the word out and we do hope that people will call, and typically people do. But if we're having difficulty with our phone system, that may be the case. But sometimes people just like to listen and observe and whatever. But whatever it is, our job is to produce the best possible programming that we can. And I have really, really been excited about the programming that we've done, phenomenal Black women that we have premiered and talk to here. And it will conclude next Monday with Estela Vasquez. So everybody who knows Estela, line up right now and you call in next week and give her a shout out. We're going to have her on to talk about her life and legacy and the work that she's done with 1199 SIU. This is the Professor Dr. Ron Daniels. The program is Vantage Point. It's on WBAI 99.5 FM in collaboration with YCRadio.org. We'll see you again next week, right here.